Have you noticed the number of Canadians coming into the United States to visit and shop is way down this year?
The lure of the United States for Canadians to travel is still significant, with beautiful geography and people, friends, family, all of that. But it's on hold, and it's being put on hold by basically one individual.
Coming up, Canadian friends explain how they're taking President Trump's provocations personally.
We are independent and will always be independent, of spirit and of mind and of geography.
Rick Antonsen and Wade Davis remind us what it means to them to be Canadian.
Our slogan, our national motto, if you will, wouldn't inspire revolution, peace, order, and good government. But that's in fact what we've had since the Confederation in 1867.
Come along for what promises to be an illuminating hour with the next door neighbors. It's Travel with Rick Steves. Canada and the U.S. have been great neighbors for a long time. It's been a point of pride for generations. The longest national border in the world, more than 5,500 miles worth, has always been a sign of friendship and cooperation between our two nations. Hey, I'm Rick Steves. All my life, when driving 3 hours north from Seattle to Vancouver, I've enjoyed the monument that marks the border between Blaine, Washington, and Surrey, British Columbia. When I was little, my dad took me to the Peace Arch, the state and provincial park right there shared by both countries. And we read the inscriptions etched on that majestic white arch. On the U.S. side, it reads, "Children of a Common Mother," referring to our common origin from the British Empire. The words on the Canadian side read, "Brethren dwelling together in unity," taken from the Book of Psalms. Within the arch, each country has an iron gate forever left open with the inscription, "May these gates never be closed." Well, of course, in the last few months, President Trump has shocked citizens in both countries with a new foreign policy of threats and rhetoric about annexing all of Canada as the so-called 51st state. This bullying has opened a wound on the relationship between the two countries. So, in response, many Canadians are boycotting travel to the U.S. or purchasing products made in the USA. And our president's even been eager to start a trade war with tariffs. To help us grapple with what's going on in the relationship between our countries, I've invited two of our Canadian friends back with us for the hour ahead today on Travel with Rick Steves. Rick Antonsen has written about Canadian history and travel, and he headed Tourism Vancouver when they made their successful bid to host the 2010 Winter Olympics. Wade Davis teaches anthropology at the University of British Columbia, and he's written about adventure travels and discoveries all around the world. They're joining us from their homes in Western Canada. Rick and Wade, thanks for being here.
Well, thanks, Rick.
It's nice to be a part of this.
You know, we are neighbors. We live a few hours' drive from each other, and the same as so much of our two countries, children of a common mother. How do you see it from Canada? I mean, it's a big change. Wade?
Well, I think we do have this extraordinary common history. At the same time, Canadians have always been somewhat resentful of the idea that Americans equate Canada with the United States, because in so many ways we're fundamentally different. Americans look west for heroes, we look north. You know, to be Canadian is to understand that the real measure of a civilized nation is not the wealth accumulated by the lucky few, but the strength and bonds of social relations and the connections based on reciprocity that fuse a people into a common destiny, if you will. And I think there's some hurt involved, too. I heard someone interview a Holocaust survivor, and they asked the woman, "How could you ever trust anyone having gone through that experience?" And she said, "Well, I trust anybody who would hide me." Well, Canadians hid Americans during the Iran hostage crisis at the risk of the lives of our own people in the consulate. When 9/11 happened, air traffic had to come down to the ground. It landed in Gander. Thousands of Americans were hosted in the homes of the small population of that Newfoundland town. And so there's a feeling that we've always stood up to help. And so this is not just a kind of a frivolous, bombastic statement from Trump. He has insulted our political leaders. He has consistently used reference to a 51st state. We know politically that's not going to happen, but it really has struck a chord in Canada, and it's created this kind of wonderful nationalism And of course, it turned our elections upside down. You know, the Conservative Party destined to win 30 points ahead in the polls. And Mark Carney comes in and turns over overnight, and largely because of his stand and his capability to deal with Trump.
So it's clearly, it's rattled Canada to the roots, and it makes how Canada is distinct from the United States more clear. Rick, the basic issues are the tariffs, the threats of annexation, and just kind of the bullying with our president calling your prime minister, former prime minister, a mayor, you know. It shows itself, as we've read about in hockey games, where when there's an American team up in Canada and the Star-Spangled Banner is played, there's no cheers, there's boos. Rick, when you think about the impact on Canada, Wade just mentioned how it buoyed the opposition to your right-wing party. What else is the response from Canada emotionally and practically?
Well, we've gone from seeing the American border as one of those suburban good neighbor fences that looks nice on both sides. You build the fence not just as you see it, but knowing that others look at it. And it's gone from a good neighbor fence to a visual barrier that people no longer feel comfortable stepping across. And I think in a practical sense, you've seen a significant reduction of Canadians not wanting to go south for vacations or even short-term shopping trips. And that's dropped like month over month, the current times, by almost 50%. So the ramifications then become very practical for American entrepreneurs or small businesses that are relying on Canadian traffic. Then there's the bigger impact of people no longer going down for a two-week vacation, or people saying, gosh, I had pre-booked, I went to Palm Springs, but it's my last year for a while. The lure of the United States for Canadians to travel is still significant, with beautiful geography and people, friends, family, all of that. But it's on hold, and it's being put on hold by basically one individual. When you ask about tariffs and the impacts, the sort of retaliatory, almost impulsive response was highlighted in Canada by the liquor stores in Ontario and in British Columbia, government run in many instances, removing all American product. And that looked like a short-term, let's make a point. It's now been 2 months, and those products are not on the shelves. And the buying patterns in Canada by Canadians have changed notably, and new allegiances are being created. But we don't want to forget, many of us have family, friends, colleagues on both sides of the border and cherished relationships, and they too will sustain us getting through this.
You know, it seems to me there's sort of a tragic consequence of having such a good, caring, cousins kind of loving relationship that one side, with the wrong leadership or more of a aggressive approach, could think, oh, misperceive that as weakness. And, you know, Canada is like so polite in our minds. I would imagine a lot of Americans didn't realize there was such a spine there and they could actually be bullied or purchased or something. And
well, you,
people,
you know,
could
Rick,
really
only a bully would see civility, humility, kindness, generosity as weak traits of character. Only a bone spur warrior would fail to see, who knew nothing about history, would fail to see the strength, the character that lies in Canada. You know, just because we're a country committed to peace, you know, it was a Canadian who wrote the words of the Human Declaration of Rights. It was a foundational document of the United Nations. We were stood behind the creation of the International Criminal Court. Pierre Trudeau, a liberal prime minister, led the way on nuclear disarmament. A conservative Brian Mulroney rallied the world against apartheid. Just because, you know, we are civil people doesn't mean that we don't know how to fight. And in fact, we've never lost a war.
This is Travel with Rick Steves, and we're speaking with Canadian neighbors today to help us get a handle on the recent tensions that have strained the longtime friendly relationship between the United States and Canada. Wade Davis teaches cultural anthropology at the University of British Columbia, and Rick Antonsen has headed tourism organizations in Vancouver and the Asia-Pacific region. Rick's most recent book is an update to Slumach's Gold, about a legendary gold mine hidden in the wilds of British Columbia. We have links to their work in the notes for this week's show at ricksteves.com/radio. You know, Rick and Wade, this is, I think, surprisingly emotional. I never imagined we'd be in this situation. My grandparents homesteaded in Edmonton, Alberta, and my mom grew up in White Rock in Vancouver. And I called my cousin a couple of weeks ago in Vancouver, and I didn't know I had so much emotion inside of me. I was crying on the phone to apologize to her because we took for granted what a beautiful partnership we had in the world, where for generations that just felt like win-win. And I think we've lost win-win now. And there's two ways of looking at the world. You can do everything in a transactional way and have a winner and a loser, or you can realize that we're in this together and we actually need each other. I think it's going to be an educational experience as we work our way through this, and we're going to gain a respect for the spine in Canada, and we'll also gain a respect for how we're not as able to go things alone as we might have thought. Rick, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, it's not the first time there's been turmoil between our countries, or indeed battles, fixed battles between our countries. On all of those occasions, historically, Canada has come out on top. I think one of the benefits of what we're going through is that we're all taking time to embrace history. Those who care about it are looking and learning, reading, writing. We're embracing something that we kind of shrugged off and forgot. You know, when Pearl Harbor was attacked, the first country to declare war on the Japanese Empire was Canada the day after. The U.S. followed the day after that. Canada has had America's back. And because it's the larger of the siblings, we quite often are seen as they've got our back, do we have their back? And Canada has had America's back on many, many occasions. You know, when America joined World War I, it was 2 years after Canada was in pitched battle. When America joined World War II, it was 2 years after Canada was fighting and losing people. So we have been there and we've been there together. Culturally, we're so interwoven, yet culturally we're separate, distinct, and defined entities. And we are really happy with being Canadians, and we do not want to be Americans, even though the cousin term that you used is fitting and satisfying. We are independent and will always be independent of spirit and of mind and of geography.
From bitter searching of the heart, quickened with passion and with pain, we rise to play a greater part. This is the faith from which we start. Men shall know commonwealth again from bitter searching of the heart.
We have more Canadian perspectives with Wade Davis and Rick Antonsen in just a moment as we go deeper into the history and attitudes that make Canada distinct from the United States, including some things that Americans may have never heard of before. It's Travel with Rick Steves. With a reputation as one of the most polite societies in the world, it takes a lot to anger an entire nation of Canadians. But that's what's happened since President Donald Trump announced that he intends to annex Canada and its neighbor, Greenland, one way or another. Helping us to get a Canadian perspective on the strained political relationship between the U.S. and Canada these days, we're joined today on Travel with Rick Steves by two Canadian friends, authors Rick Antonsen and Wade Davis. They've both written extensively about places and people near and far from their home bases in British Columbia. Wade has also written the lead article in the current issue of Canadian Geographic. It's called North Star, Reflections on Canada and Being Canadian. Wade, a few minutes ago we were talking about how there was a political reaction in Canada, and a conservative candidate who was way ahead ended up losing after people were sort of threatened with our country's policies. What are some other consequences of this new reality? Because it is starkly different, the political landscape between our two countries, than it was a year ago. Has it impacted, for instance, Canada's challenges with its French-speaking population and the rest of the country.
No, I mean, one of the fascinating things that came out in the federal election, Rick, is the support for the Liberals in Quebec. And there is a wonderful CBC interview of a classic kind of Quebecois character who said, you know, I don't care if Marc Carney doesn't speak French. I go to Toronto, they don't speak French. I don't care. I care about my country. I think something that's really important to understand is that if you had to ask for one word to distill the essence of at least the aspirations of Canada, of course, there's always a gap between ideal and real, and there's always contradictions and so on. But the word in Canada would be fair. You know, our Chief Justice said that the key thing about the Canadian legal system is it's founded on the principle of fairness. The late Prime Minister Brian Mulroney was asked how Canada would be remembered in 150 years. And he just said, fair. That was a country. And, you know, our slogan, our national motto, if you will, wouldn't inspire revolution, peace, order, and good government. But that's, in fact, what we've had since the Confederation in 1867. And Canada works because there is a social contract. There is a recognition of our institutions. There is an appreciation for, above all, our national healthcare system, which services the collective, not the individual, and certainly not the business owner who or insurance company that views every hospital bed as a rental property. I mean, so healthcare in Canada is about social solidarity. And so I think there's this sense of fairness. You know, there's a wonderful anecdote when the great travel writer Jan Morris came to Canada, and she said in Canada you could drown in niceness. Mm-hmm. And she had bounced into a Canadian in the streets of Vancouver, and a Canadian, of course, had said, I'm sorry. And Jan didn't understand why that person would apologize to her, but she didn't understand that the phrase, I'm sorry, in Canada is not an apology. It's a mantra. It's a way of saying, you know, we live in this impossible country where there are more lakes than people for some part of our history, where the winters are so overpowering, we got to get along, and you didn't want to whack me, I didn't want to whack you. And so you don't apologize, but you collectively express regret for the awkwardness of the moment. And that is so Canadian.
Wade, I just love your North Star article that's just appeared in Canadian Geographic, and it shines a light on dimensions of Canada that most people from the United States wouldn't appreciate. And I think when you think about an American politician who thinks they could extort Canada into joining us, that's an indication that they think it's a slam dunk they're going to sell out.
Well, if you're a real estate grifter who's never made a profit and has left people holding the bag throughout his entire career, well, and for whom every relationship, including familial, is transactional, of course you're going to have that attitude. But in Canada, the landscape is a mystic endowment of the people. Like, that issue of Canadian Geographic is completely dedicated. And that magazine, incidentally, has a largest subscription of any magazine in Canada, which is kind of a metaphor in a way. I mean, it's interesting that our biggest magazine would be about our geography, but it's geography that defines Canada,
yeah,
Rick.
Yeah.
Everybody in Canada lives on the edge of the wild. I mean, in Vancouver, black bears come down to feast on the salmon. You know, in St. John's, you can look down on humpback whales. Montreal carries the weight of a province three times the size of France. You could take the United States and turn it on its side and still not reach the northern tip of Canada. There's a forest up there three times the size of Colombia, tundra the size of Western Europe.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute, because that came across in your article quite vividly, and it never occurred to me. The United States, it's from sea to shining sea, east to west. And in Canada, it's from the border into the vast Arctic. You mentioned it's as far from, you know, the border of Canada to the north as it is from Los Angeles to New York City. And we wouldn't appreciate that. We wouldn't appreciate that a third of the world's fresh water is in Canada, or that 90% of the population is within, you know, driving out for dinner in the United States. But you wouldn't appreciate the vast northness. Rick Antonsen, when you think about what contributes to the character of a Canadian that might be less appreciated south of the border, talk about that vastness and that closeness with nature that is probably stronger north of the border.
Well, we are a people of the land, and while we've explored our own country, we are Canadians as a people wish to look outwardly. We don't spend a lot of time pondering ourselves. You know, you raised the issue of sort of Canadian healthcare. The father of Canadian healthcare, said, we only need to wish for others, those things we want for ourselves. And that defines Canadians, in Tommy Douglas's words, where we actually do care about one another. We care about the vastness of our land. We want to protect it. We see it as autonomy. If we pick a word that's up for debate right now, it may well be between our nations, the word integrity. And we feel that in this moment, Canadians have immense sense of place, of purpose, of meaningfulness, but also of integrity, something that we see when we look south of the border, not to put everybody in sort of one bailiwick, but we do see a lack of integrity. We see a lack of outward looking. We see a willingness to make enemies of family and to unnecessarily create controversy and chaos where it's not needed.
Well, that's the essence of America First. Our Canadian neighbors are helping us to better understand the political friction the Trump administration has stirred up from their vantage point up in Canada. Wade Davis teaches cultural anthropology at the University of British Columbia. His latest book is a collection of essays called Beneath the Surface of Things. Rick Antonsen has headed tourism organizations in Vancouver and the Asia-Pacific region. His most recent book is an update to Slumach's Gold about the legendary gold mine hidden in the wilds of British Columbia. We have links to their work in the notes for this week's show at ricksteves.com/radio. I find it interesting to think about how Canada is connected more closely with nature and also more closely with its native heritage. First of all, what term do you use for your Indigenous tribes?
Is it Indigenous peoples?
Or First Nations?
Or First Nations.
First Nations.
I mean, the key thing to think about that, Rick, is that for the first 240 years of what became Canada, we were not a settler society. We were a mercantile society based on a fashion statement, the beaver hat. And for that trade, the Scots and the French, who may not have been kind to the First Peoples, they nevertheless needed them. And so not only did they not slaughter them, they married them, as John Ralston Saul famously wrote, and in doing so moved up in the world. And so the idea and the landscape, you can't escape the power of the landscape. You know, the greatest expression of Canadian patriotism is that line of verse from Juvenal, my country is not a country, it's the winter. And we've always been a land of mosaics because the land demands that. And we also have been a place of multiple voices. Between Vancouver and Prince George, which is the equivalent of driving 800 kilometers, you go through more languages than you would from Moscow to Madrid. And the world, as Mark Carney, our prime minister, has said, is in Canada, and Canada is in the world. In Toronto, half the people in Toronto were born outside of Canada. And the process of reconciliation that we're going through with the First Nations is costly, painful, difficult. But the extraordinary thing, it has consistent support politically across the political agenda and from coast to coast into the Arctic.
And so tell us what that is, because Americans don't, we've heard of a certain kind of reparations or something like that, but what is the process of reconciliation?
It all comes down to the law. The British Royal Proclamation dictated that the Crown had to treat with Indigenous peoples. Now, those treaties could have been heavily biased in favor of the outsiders, but they had to exist. And when the frontier reached west, the demographic collapse from disease had been such that the colonial fathers decided, why bother, as if the Indigenous populations were going to disappear. Well, they didn't disappear. And so by Canadian and the antecedent of British law, Canada must treat with Indigenous people in lands that have never been subject to treaty. And that's a very complicated process. But let me put it simply for an American audience. What would happen to Barack Obama if it was announced that he was going west to Arizona to treat nation to nation with the Navajo to decide who actually owned the Grand Canyon? Well, that's actually going on every day in Canada. And the remarkable thing about it isn't just that it's happening, but as my beloved friend Rick, I'll call you Rick A on the broadcast here, Rick, would concur, it gets complete support across the nation. And that's in and of itself remarkable. Very few countries would have the courage let alone the decency, to embark on such a process of real reconciliation. The Haida, by law, just got back total and utter control of the archipelago that they've occupied for 10,000 years.
And if I could jump in there, I would say that the average Canadian understands the importance of what is going on, why it is going on. They are able to comprehend the historic perspective, but also the future, and know that what is being done, to go back to a word that was used earlier, is fair. It's appropriate. It's necessary. Yeah. There is no way forward without going through what is protracted and at times painful, but it's respect of nation to nation, of Indigenous peoples who were the First Nations and remain First Nations and have a status in our country that few other countries would accord to their original inhabitants.
You know, in the United States, we've got our founding fathers and our, you know, Bill of Rights and things that we are very proud of and rely on. And this conversation here is shining a light to me on fundamental dimensions of Canadian character that it would be healthy for Americans to appreciate. And we could think more about your closeness with nature, because surviving has been more of a challenge north of the border in your vast northern reaches. We could look more closely at how you are dealing honestly with the heritage of living on land of Indigenous peoples, and how you're dealing with that in fairness, this word that is so fundamental to Canadian character. I learned that recently that when we think of the Underground Railroad, back when we were dealing with Civil War and slavery, slaves would escape their plantations in the deep south of the United States, and the end of the rainbow for them was Canada. That's where they were going, because Canada, even 150, 180 years ago, provided a safe refuge, just like you're talking about more in modern times. And then the United States today, it's trendy to think poorly of the United Nations, whereas I would think in Canada, the United Nations is fundamental to how the world works together. Talk a little bit about that, and I just think it's fascinating, Wade.
Well, I mean, first of all, what you initially said was so correct, Rick. You know, Margaret Atwood said, if you wanted to understand the difference between the United States and Canada, you needed two words: for Canada, survival; for America, frontier. And the United States was settled by settlers, literally, often religious sects who came over from the old world to escape religious persecution, only to practice their own form of religious exclusion in the New World. I mean, America from its founding was a place of settlement and slavery. And Canada, as I said earlier, was a mercantile system where Indigenous people became allies. And of course, even though there may have been, and there were, you know, before the British Empire eliminated slavery in 1837, I think it was, a handful of indentured enslaved individuals, we never had institutional slavery. And so when Martin Luther King gave the Massey Lectures, which is a great tradition in Canada, he spoke of Canada being the North Star, the old Negro spirituals, as he put it, as being coded messages on how you could get north. And this represents a fundamental difference between the two countries and the heritage of the two countries. Canada embraces pluralism reflexively.
You can illustrate that in how Canada has punched above its weight as a founding member of the United Nations, helping establish the International Criminal Court.
Right. But that, you know, all the efforts we've made as a nation committed to peace, and you shouldn't forget, as Rick mentioned, the martial history of our soldiers. You know, it was actually 3 years after the outbreak of the Great War that the Americans came in. Of course, famously, on Easter Monday in the spring of 1917 at the Battle of Arras, the Canadian Corps, fighting for the first time, took Vimy Ridge, which the British and French had failed to take in 3.5 years. Hmm. And we took it in 3 days. And that forged the identity of the Canadian forces, who then became the vanguard of the Allied efforts in the months that led to the end of the war. The same thing happened in Hitler's war. Normandy Beach, the Canadians at Juneau went further inland than the British or the Americans did on either flank at Juneau Beach. We suffered more casualties than anywhere but Omaha Beach. And again, as Rick said, we fought for 3 years before the Americans showed up. So it's not as if we don't have a martial history.
Wade and Rick, this is, I just think it's so It's like travel. When you travel, you get out of your comfort zone, you learn about different perspectives. And we've been kind of docile about appreciating what's north of our border. It's easy to go up there and come home thinking, oh, Canadians are polite, but there are deep roots for what makes a Canadian Canadian, just like what makes an American American. I find it fascinating when I look into this that Canadians know us better than we know Canadians. Part of that might be media. The majority of Canada's population, I think, is within reach of media from south of the border. And you're more likely to look at PBS than we are to look at CBC. Would you imagine that Canadians understand Americans better than Americans understand Canadians?
Well, I think most places in the world understand the United States better than the United States understands most places in the world. And Rick, with all your travels, you know that.
Yeah.
Canadians love America. You know, I became an American citizen. I married an American. My daughters fly back and forth at ease. You know, none of this is anti-American. It's mainly right. A feeling of disappointment.
And we have a golden rule that runs between these shores. You stay out of my face, I'll stay out of yours. In Canada, get along in Canada.
We're gaining a better appreciation for our Canadian neighbors on today's Travel with Rick Steves. At least, I hope we are. There's more with our guests in just a moment. You can also find out about Rick Antonsen's books on Western Canadian history, the Rocky Mountaineer train line, his adventures hiking Mount Ararat and in Papua New Guinea, and driving the legendary Route 66. It's on his website at rickantonsen.com. Wade Davis teaches at the University of British Columbia, and he's written books about the effects of a changing ecology from the Colorado River to the rainforests of Borneo and the Amazon. He provides links to his books, photographs, and films at daviswade.com. He's also written the lead article on what it means to be Canadian for the latest edition of Canadian Geographic magazine. Rick Antonsen and Wade Davis are helping us better appreciate what makes Canada unique on this special Canada Day edition of Travel with Rick Steves. You know, Wade, you wrote in your article about some childhood memories and how those really were a good indication of what it's like to be Canadian. Share some of those childhood memories on what made you Canadian.
I love that question, Rick, because it's the essence of who we are, you know, growing up in Quebec, playing hockey on the St. Lawrence River, the winter storms coming through and cracking maples and oak trees at the base, you know, the scars on the thighs of the teacher who taught me to paddle, the scars from the time that he fought off the bear and survived. The sense of the wild and the scale of our landscape and the opportunity as a young man and woman to know it. A very good friend of mine died on his trap line about 40 years ago, and he made a mistake. He was great in the bush, but he made a mistake. He went out underdressed and fell through the ice, and 60 feet of snow fell, and the Mounties couldn't get to his body till spring. And I wrote up the tragedy for an American outdoor magazine, and the editors in Chicago categorically refused to believe that 60 feet of snow could fall anywhere. So they ran the essay, but changed it from feet to inches, even though I had sent them a corroborating letter from the RCMP in Stewart, British Columbia. They just couldn't understand the depth and drama of the Canadian landscape. And so Canada has this sort of quality, you know, and it becomes who you are.
And it's part of your upbringing. I mean, Rick, can you share some of your distant memories as a child that were just like quintessentially Canadian?
In our book on Slumax Gold that you mentioned earlier, we have what is called the best campfire story ever. And it's got my brother of 9 years old, me of 8 years old. And we'd been out fishing. It was dusk. We'd come back in and we cooked the filleted fish over the fire. And the camp cook, who was quite old at the time, she leaned into the campfire and told us the legend of this indigenous man who had been hung for murder and placed a curse on a lost gold mine. And that sent us as brothers on a quest in search of this legend. And it put in place our at first taking sort of the popular vision of indigenous peoples to an adulthood now of realizing through deep diving in dusty archives and an understanding, a mature understanding of our country and how it formed and how legends took root often in stereotypes. So I look at that as something that just put in place early prejudices that then were overcome as I reached for adulthood. I would say there are other perspectives that are maybe more recent. You know, when the 2010 Olympics were happening in Vancouver and Whistler, the torch relay in Canada to deliver the torch to the opening event cauldron went within 10 miles of 90% of the population of Canada. Mm. And that was a vision of John Furlong, who was spearheading the games, but it was something that was so Canadian. This isn't about leaving people out. This is about finding ways to include everyone and make it sometimes really easy to identify with Canada and really easy to understand the vastness of this geographical wonder that we call a country.
You know, this is such a celebration of what is Canada. It, for me, it's a joy to hear this. And it's a odd little silver lining to this unfortunate situation we find ourselves in now because of America's new stance among nations on this planet. But when you look at the difficult times that we're in, we can also see a silver lining. I would imagine in Canada there's a new esprit de corps. Wade?
Oh, without doubt. I mean, and I think, as Rick said earlier, that in response to the tariffs, I mean, the tariffs, let's be realistic, the tariffs are a little less than a declaration of war. I mean, you know, a single-handed, deliberate, unnecessary intrusion that will do severe damage both to the American, of course, but also critically to the Canadian economy. But the positive side of that is it's increased the incentive for provincial trade, for breaking down barriers between the various provinces. And in our system in Canada, the provinces have a lot more autonomy and authority than the states do in the federal system of the United States. So it will integrate the country. It's taken long festering wounds such as Quebec sovereignty almost off the table. I mean, we saw this in the recent election, where not only did the Liberals reverse a huge deficit, but they essentially reduced the other parties to the margins, because this became an election about survival, and we wanted to be
enhanced. So in a sense, it's good for, quote, Canada right now.
In a sense.
Good has come from it for Canada.
Yeah, good has come from it.
It's not good for Canada, but.
Good has come from it. That's a good distinction, Rick. But let's talk about how the United States might underestimate how we need Canada. We kind of think everybody needs us, but we don't need everybody else. What are some ways we might not appreciate the impact of this trade war?
Well, how about the fact that we're either your first or second largest trading partner in the world? I mean, what more needs to be said? Or the fact that we have massive hydroelectric capacity at a time when energy demands are going to skyrocket with the demands of AI and other new technologies. The fact that we control a third of the world's fresh water at a time when 45 million Americans are facing perpetual and disastrous drought through American Southwest. I mean, we have a lot that we can offer the United States. In fact, some Canadians would say too much.
But from a bully's point of view, couldn't tariffs drive you to your knees so that you just said, please take us back any way we want?
No, I think that's really important. Two things, and they're both fact versus fantasy. The fact is, Canada provides so much, and Wade's articulated a number of those specifics, to the United States or for the United States or with the United States. The fiction is that one person has said loud and clear and in total fallacy that the United States doesn't need Canada or that Canada doesn't have anything the United States needs. That is just factually wrong, incorrect, irrelevant, stupid. So not to be unkind or uncharitable, you know, the polite use of the term ignorance is simply without knowledge. So the more we as Canadians can do with our American friends and relatives and counterparts to encourage more knowledge about Canada, the less ignorance there will be, the more appreciation, thus respect.
That is so Canadian polite. What a beautiful way to say there's the lack of knowledge, yes.
Right. So here we are with one person saying that we are an unnecessary country with an artificial pencil-drawn border that is not relevant and came about accidentally or whatever. All things that are falsehoods. But those falsehoods take root and get believed. And then you have the nonsense of Canada's the 51st state, which is an insult to Canada. Because first of all, we've a half a dozen provinces that are larger than almost all of the American states geographically. And to think that there wouldn't be not one, but rather 10 new American states, each with two senators, each with a bunch of Congress members, all of those things that get lost in the trite one-liners is really frustrating for Canadians, because we would like to be known and respected for who and what we are, which is an ally, a friend, business partner, and family.
Canadian authors Wade Davis and Rick Antonsen are helping us understand Canada on its own terms today on Travel with Rick Steves. Wade tells us more about how the aim for an egalitarian social contract works in Canadian society. It's in an extra from today's interview. You can listen to that and find web links to our guests at ricksteves.com/radio. So when we think about Canada, it just keeps coming up again and again. Hockey. I mean, I think what baseball and apple pie is to the United States, hockey must be even more to Canada. Tell us a little bit about how hockey is such a big deal, Wade, for Canadians.
Well, you know, I started playing hockey at 3. I had my first hospitalizing injury at 5, and my career ended with a slap shot to the head at 15. I mean, for many of us, hockey remains our greatest metaphor. Because elbows up, of course, isn't a sign of a defensive posture, let alone weakness. Elbows up was the triumph of Gordie Howe, one of the greatest hockey players ever, who had this reputation of being Mr. Gentleman, but he was ferociously violent on the ice. And he had a way of getting into a corner, and when someone didn't see it coming, his elbow broke their nose. So elbows up is definitely not a gesture of passivity. It's a statement of strength.
And we're hearing that. We're not only hearing that, we're seeing that.
Strength and surprise.
Strength and surprise. Wow.
You know, the other thing just to reflect on, earlier, Rick, you said, you know, let's remember Canada is a country of almost 50 million people. We have people from all around the world. Our universities as a system are unsurpassed. We have more university graduates in our population than any other country in the world. We have enormous intellectual, artistic, industrial, technological capacity. And we have a reputation really second to none around the world, which is worth an enormous amount in terms of diplomatic relationships, integrity, trade, etc. So Canada will be just fine no matter what happens.
Rick Antonsen, I'm going to just read the words of your national anthem. I won't sing it because we want people to keep listening, but I'm going to read these words, and I find them stirring. And we've all done the first line of O Canada when you guys win an award at the Olympics or something like that. But tell me your response when I read it. O Canada, our home and native land. Troop. O Canada. O Canada, our home and native land. True patriot love in all of us command. With glowing hearts we see thee rise. The true North, strong and free. Why am I so emotional about this? The true North, strong and free. From far and wide, O Canada, we stand on guard for thee. God, keep our land glorious and free. O Canada, we stand on guard for thee. O Canada, we stand on guard for thee. Whoa, I'm not even Canadian, and that pulls my heartstrings. Rick, what do you think when I read that?
Many things. First of all, it is one of the hardest national anthems to sing with verve and vitality. It's difficult. And Canadians often have been shy about singing publicly together. And that has changed greatly with the Olympics in Canada, where there was a sense that we are all in this together. And Canadians have learned to love the national anthem in a way that isn't boisterous or overly patriotic. And in fact, wherever it is sung at a national sporting event, or it always is an intermingling of English and French, and one dare say one day probably an indigenous language that begins to reflect that we are so many things. Wade earlier used the term mosaic, and it's often been said that a difference between Canada and the United States is the American melting pot. You all become sort of one, whereas in Canada, we have what we would term the Canadian mosaic. And I think that's reflected in our anthem, that this can be many things to many people, and your own interpretation you take away from it does not have to be the same as someone down the road or across the country or up north. It is one country and many people.
So important. Wade?
I would just add that I think Canadians, A, don't really need patriotic symbols, and as Rick suggested, aren't always comfortable with them. I mean, you can't imagine a Canadian politician wrapping themselves in the flag. We didn't even have one until 1965, and then the country came to a standstill as we argued about one or three maple leaves. You know, of course we love our flag. Of course we love that anthem. But I just feel it's like my country is not a country, it's the winter. That line of Gilles Vigneault's verse is just so, I don't feel like I need symbols to remind me of my patriotism. My patriotism is in the water, in the air, in the forest, in the sound of an eagle and a raven spinning in the sky. I find my patriotism in my homeland, in the land itself.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been talking with Rick Antonsen and Wade Davis. Rick and Wade, what's the takeaway? Americans might feel like we've betrayed you and we're no longer welcome in each other's company. What's not necessarily your approach, but what's the general feeling in Canada? And would we be welcome to, for instance, vacation in Canada?
So if I may say two things. One is there was a recent book called 1945, which poses that was the year when so much happened in Canada with the returning of a million armed services people from overseas and into the workforce and all sorts of changes on the Canadian healthcare front and the social dynamics. There was lots happening that, of course, then led to the baby boom and the following amazing 5-10 years in Canada, other parts of the world too. But I think it is fair to say that the year 2025 could be the new 1945 for Canada. We are about to become overtly one of the most exciting to watch countries on the planet. So it is a time for people to discover, pay attention to, learn about Canada. In terms of our American friends, it's really important to say that to understand Canada, it's best to come and visit Canada. And the proverbial welcome mat is on our doorstep. Americans are welcome, invited, hoped to come and visit, spend time in our country, spend time with Canadians, learn about Canadians. I would say about the obverse that right now there's not a sense of welcome for Canadians out of the United States. And that has been shown in the reticence of Canadians to travel south of the border, which is a shame, because if we've learned anything with three people on this discussion that have had the good fortune to see much of the world, we have learned that travel is a mighty force for peace. And travel is about bringing people together to share ideas and learn from one another and to celebrate our differences. And Canada's welcome to American visitors is strong. We hope it's embraced, and it is there during times when people are wondering, is it okay? Will I be comfortable? And the answer is yes.
Thank you, Rick Antonsen. And as you were talking, it occurred to me one of the most impactful experiences I had in the early years of my career was going up to Vancouver for a convention called Travel, a Vital Force for Peace, put on by Canadian leaders.
Louis Damore. And he founded the Institute for Peace Through Tourism, based in Vermont, actually.
There you go. Wade, last thoughts on the American welcome and the reason we might travel north of the border.
Well, I'd almost like to flip that and remind everybody how great Americans are. I recently, Rick, was down to do a series of lectures at University of Georgia in Athens, I spent 2 days on campus with the wonderful kids and many faculties. And when it came to do my keynote talk, I actually teared up in front of that audience because my first thought was to thank them for having reminded me over those 2 days of just how wonderful Americans are as a people. And let's remember that this whole business was set in motion by one individual of, in my opinion, of hugely dubious moral integrity or lack thereof. And he doesn't speak for all Americans. And in my opinion, America will always be and continue to be the land of Walt Whitman and the Grateful Dead. So let's just hope that that America, if you will, comes back to the fore. But let's never forget how good American people can be.
Mm. Hearts open and elbows up. Thank you guys so much. Rick Antonsen, Wade Davis, what an inspirational conversation. Best wishes in your work, and we'll get through this.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington by Tim Tatton, Kazmara Hall, and Donna Bardsley. Andrew Wakeling and Sherry Court upload the shows to our website, and our theme music is by Jerry Frank. You can find links to our guests and listen to a podcast version of the show or search the archives. It's all at ricksteves.com/radio.
Rick Steves Classroom Europe is a fast, free, and fun video archive. It's designed for teachers, travelers, and students. It gives you immediate access to some 500 short video clips from the Rick Steves Europe TV show library. Clips cover European history, art, culture, food, and geography. Google Classroom Europe or visit ricksteves.com to watch clips and create your own playlist. Teachers love it. Students do too.